What's going on, guys? Welcome back to the Renegade Movement School podcast. I'm Fernandez, and I'm sitting here with Fernandez from the Renegade.
Hang on. How did we get? What are you doing in my...
Hold on a second. This is the Vitality Secrets podcast.
We're on the wrong podcast.
I got Sim Bukhara as my guest today. Dude, I'm super stoked to have you here. Sitting down this lovely backyard.
Yeah.
Having a little tea party out here.
Thanks for having me. It's an absolute pleasure to be on here.
Yeah, man. Sim, I'd love if you could quickly introduce yourself and give a bit of background about what you do.
Yeah, well, wow. I would guess I am a multidimensional human. I've got lots of little facets in relation to what I do and how I kind of approach the world. But as an easy one, I guess I would say I'm a holistic health coach. I'm a movement practitioner. I teach mindfulness, and I'm also a professional fire performer as well. So I guess that's where the multidimensional stuff kind of all links in. And yeah, I guess I'm just a curious human. I'd like to learn, and I'd like to share the things that I learn. And I've been fascinated mainly with the body for a really long time and how it links with our psychology and our spirituality. And just learning about the textures and themes that interweave with us and how we can, you know, become more vital and how we can really get out there and share all our gifts with the world. And that's the journey that I've been on. And I guess I'm just sharing the little gemstones that I pick up with people as I kind of, yeah, move along my course.
Yeah, dope, dude.
Yeah.
There's so many different facets, and we just had a coffee before, and it's always like the podcast happens before the podcast as well. There's so many awesome things I wanted to dig into that I'm like, oh, we just don't say this yet. We're gonna record. But movement is such a level in which we're both really, you know, we've both gone to some pretty extreme and weird places with it, you know, but I think we also started in a similar place. And I'd love for you to take me back to, you know, where did the whole journey with the body and movement start? Like, what was the genesis for you getting really interested in this kind of stuff?
Yeah. So it started off, you know, as a kid playing basketball, just being really in my body, being one of the taller kids at school, being really good at basketball as well, just really athletic. And that quickly changed to seeking more aesthetics. When I was 15, my friend took me to the gym, introduced me to protein shakes and dumbbells, and man, my life was changed after that. I realized the inputs of spending a little bit of time and a little bit of weight and eating more would equate to more people noticing me and me being seen more, because I felt quite, I guess, lacking security within myself around those paradigms and frames. And yeah, I got into lifting weights, bodybuilding, strongman, powerlifting, competed in a bunch of bodybuilding competitions, competed in a bunch of strongman competitions, competed in some amateur powerlifting competitions. And once I hit around 23, my body really started falling apart. You know, the way I was training and going about my physicality, it just wasn't fully serving me. I had arthritis in 26 different joints and got diagnosed with ankylosing spondylitis, which is a reactive style of arthritis, which they say you have for life, and eventually your spine fuses together.
Yeah.
I had really bad pain. I couldn't get out of bed most mornings. You know, I was like pretty much bedridden for about 6 months, and just severe pain in my hips, my knees, my ankles, my shoulders, my wrists, my neck, in my breastbone. I had costochondritis in my breastbone, which lasted 2-3 years. And couldn't push anything, couldn't even go past 90 degrees with my knees. And that's when something clicked, where I realized I had to take responsibility for my own health. And I started really diving into some of the softening practices, learning how to balance all the rigidity and tension I had in my body from all the heavy lifting and all the goal-driven stuff about hitting my metrics, and then moving much more into the softening practices, learning how to control my breath and my movement, softening all the fascia and the musculature around my body, and just balancing that pendulum a little bit. And in that balancing of the pendulum, it opened me up to all the movement arts, you know, all the Ido Portal stuff, all the gymnastic body stuff, all the calisthenic stuff, and just learning about my body more and what it was capable of and how it was meant to be used, you know, and just learning and finding balance within myself. And that reverberated into the rest of my life, from business to emotional to relationships to personal, all of it.
Fucking hell, dude. I actually didn't know. It's so funny that our journeys share so many parallels. I think it's a rite of passage for like a tall, skinny Indian kid to want to be a basketball player and then want to get jacked. It's exactly the same thing for me.
Yep.
But I didn't know the extent of the, like, the ankylosing spondylitis thing. And yeah, these, I'm interested in how did you get to softening practices from there? Because my kind of intuition would say that probably wouldn't be the first rock you looked under. You know what I mean?
No.
It wouldn't have been like you went to the doctors and got these scans and be like, I'm sorry, you have this lifelong degenerative, you know, joint degenerative disease. What you need is spinal waves. Yeah. Probably, if it did, I want to see your GP.
Yeah.
It doesn't sound like it was that. So how, like, what did you have to go through in order to find that? And how did that actually help with this condition?
Totally, yeah. It was actually the contrary. The fact that I didn't find that anywhere and the fact that every prescription I was given was either medicine or operations.
Mm-hmm.
So it was either tablets that would help with inflammation or try to quell some of the arthritic pain, which had a whole subset of other side effects, right? Which I never took. And the other part was like, yeah, we can look at maybe fusing parts of your spine if the pain gets too bad or you start getting rounded and hunched in certain areas.
Yeah.
And that just didn't seem like an option for me. You know, I had such big dreams with my body.
Yeah.
I was so connected to my body. And I thought I was so connected with my body.
Mm.
And that, whereas begins the journey of becoming in more connection with myself.
Yeah.
It was funny. One of my best friends who we trained together, competed together, he was a little bit ahead of me in time. He started with the gymnastic body stuff. He started learning all the ski squats and like the knee circles and learning all the bits and pieces. And there was a beautiful practitioner of movement called Simon Takua, who does ancestral movement.
Yeah.
Me and my friend Eros, we went to his workshop. That's where we started learning all the softening practices. Because he's like, you should try some of this. Maybe this will be better. Because he felt almost quite empathetic towards my situation.
Yeah.
He could feel a lot of sympathy around it. And he was trying to figure out what is the best way that I can help one of my best mates. He's like, just try some of these. And I was like, kind of reluctant. Like, fuck, I can't even bend my knees right now. Like, how am I going to even do a ski squat? I just started doing a little bit of it. Then I started to feel a little bit of yield, a little bit of alleviation of pressure and tension in some of my joints. I just kept going on the path and then kept learning and then started learning a lot of the Taoist philosophy around Qigong and internal martial arts and realizing that so much of the tension in my body was not only emotional, but it was just so much rigidity being held with how I was living and how I was perceiving life. And the more I could soften my belief structures and the more I could send more trust and safety into my body with my breath, the more my musculature was softened. But it's not about softening to the point where I lose the tension. It's about having the tension that was available to me, but then also having this part of me which I could switch off and go into a fully relaxed state with a threat of alertness still there.
Yeah. That's fascinating, man. And so you were able to, you know, kind of have some kind of gut response that maybe some of the paths that were being laid out for you by the specialists didn't feel intuitively right for you to go down. You started looking under some other rocks and started to find more of this softening practice and I guess found the whole world of movement and changed the way that you were moving. What happened next in terms of your symptoms and your arthritic joints and what was the journey out of that? Because I would imagine there'd be people listening to this who have gone on their own journey with joint pain, maybe even the same kind of conditions. What was that path out like for you? Was it softening practices and then it was all good? Or, you know, like what, as you started to unpack and understand maybe the causes of this a little bit more for your situation, what was that like?
Yeah, it was rough. Yeah. You know, the softening practices were one big stone of a few stones that needed to be moved in order to get myself back to a place of harmony. And I like to use the word harmony because I believe once the body's in harmony, all the bullshit goes. All the inflammation goes, right? And finding this harmonious place where we can literally dance with our body and dance with life. Now that I can see it from that place, it was never the goal then. It was just like these softening practices might help me alleviate my pain.
Yeah.
Then for 5 years of going through that journey, the first two or three, I actually used the same mentality that I used in my bodybuilding and powerlifting with pushing those practices, the softening practices, pushing the flexibility, pushing
exactly the same thing,
all the stability work, right?
Oh, how can I do this spinal leg? Squeeze every inch out of this.
Yeah. Like trying to drive all the juice out of like middle splitting and front splitting and then actually causing more pain.
Yeah.
So it started, like the pain started to alleviate for about 3, 4 months, 5 months. Then it started to progressively get worse and worse and worse, where I had to completely stop all the movement stuff.
Wow.
So I stopped all the movement stuff after a couple of years of trying to go too hard, adopting the same mentality of, I guess, driving tension through the practice.
Yeah.
Even though it was a softening practice, my metrics were tensioned. And yeah, the other big rock was the nutritional stuff, like really dialing in on what was supportive of my body at that time. And the other big block was actually dealing with a lot of the things that I was doing in my everyday life associated with the life path I decided to walk down, the people that I was associating myself with, conversations I was having, the environments I was placing myself in, how disconnected I was from nature, how playful I was, and how my relationships were going with friends and intimate partners. Mm. All of these things had such an influx of responsiveness to the tension in my body.
Yeah.
Because all of these things psychologically can reverberate into the physical body and can cause tension. And me learning to trust and move in the directions of life that were supportive of opening and harmonizing my body actually helped the whole healing process. And now I pretty much have zero pain. And that is not an outcome that was ever seen by any medical profession. If anything, it was a degenerative kind of trajectory.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And is that like, are you still having follow-up scans? Is that degenerative? Like, is that being managed right now? Is it still a thing that you're going to have to dealing with for life? I don't know much about the actual disease.
So I completely just stopped worrying about it.
Yeah.
You know, I went by how I felt.
Yeah.
And my spine has opened up 20-fold.
Yeah.
You know, I got nice, beautiful, crisp spinal waves. Yeah. I move well. I feel good. You know, if there are certain moments where if I push things too hard and I go back into old patterns, the body will just tell me.
Yeah.
It'll be like, yo, not that.
Yeah.
It's like a beautiful biofeedback system where I get the information like pretty quickly, very responsive to it. I'm like, okay, don't do too much of that.
Yeah.
Or like prepare in a different way and then balance and then that opens up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Give me 1 second. I'm just going to double check the
recording.
I'll have to do at least one check.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking solid.
You looking crispy?
Looking crispy. Oh, I really like that you're bringing up this thing about the biofeedback from the body, because I think in a conversation around developing a more vital and resilient body, it's this kind of nuance that gets lost sometimes. There's a lot of hype about bulletproofing in the body and this kind of stuff. And it's certainly not my experience. I work with a lot of people in joint pain as well. And my perspective is that there's always a level at which you can do too much for your body.
Yeah.
And the pain is a feedback signal in order to tell you like, hey man, you might be doing a little bit too much right now.
Yeah.
So like the idea of being pain-free is like it's a constant state of like, hey, I'm not in pain. Just like doing the things I want to be able to do. I can still pursue the things I want to do with my body. But I'm grounded in the reality that I can always do too much and this can come back. And so I'm going to be in harmony with my body and listen to the feedback that I'm getting, not push things so far, like, cool, I'm bulletproof now. I can just go back to completely ignoring all of the signals that my body is giving me.
Yeah.
It's like, nah, okay, I'm able to stay in harmony with my body. I'm able to pursue the kind of things that I want to do without letting, you know, things run away and falling back into those same old patterns. So I think that's a really, and that's way more achievable as well.
Mm.
Some heightened state of like, no matter what I try to do with my body, it's never going to break. It's like, we're fucking human beings, man. We're mortal, we're imperfect, we're flawed. But that situation of like, I can do what I want to do. I can do the things that make me feel good. My body is my ally now, not this thing I'm constantly working against.
Yeah.
I think that's a fucking awesome goal, man.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's been so rewarding, you know, and it's taken a long time just to come back to the old chestnut of just find balance. You know, my parents always used to say to me, balance in everything. And I'm like, balance in everything.
Yeah.
Sure. I'm going to go push this as hard as I can.
Yeah.
And now I've come around to seeing the wisdom in them telling my 15-year-old self, balance, you know, like find balance in everything. And I'm like, Yeah, cool. I can have all the things I want. I just need to learn how to do them in a way that is in consistent harmony with all the biofeedback signals that I'm getting and in all the different elements of my body. You know, like you push anything too hard in one way, you specialize, over-specialize in too much, there's going to be a repercussion.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I want to linger on the movement stuff a little bit more because there's so many different things I want to ask you about. Yeah. But while we're on this kind of movement subject, one of the workshops that you teach is around archetypes and movement.
Yeah.
And I'd love for you to speak to, first of all, like, what is an archetype and how does it relate to movement? And also, like, why is that a, like, why archetypes and movement? Why not, like, how many fucking sets do I do?
Yeah.
Or why not, this is how you do a spinal wave? Why archetypes?
Well, the idea of archetypes for me came in my early studies in my 20s around Carl Jung's work, around the collective unconscious. And the archetypes are like primordial images or themes that exist in every single one of us. When I ask you to imagine a warrior, boom, the theme comes up. You know the feeling, the idea of what a warrior looks like, the visualization of what a warrior is. Mm. If I ask you to visualize a magician, right? Boom. The images and themes of a magician will come up straight away.
Strong mustache and cape vibe.
Yeah. And a beautiful big staff, right? And like just doing like crazy things to like create, right? To generate things. So these ideas and themes seem to be embedded in us. We kind of know what these are, what textures these themes and archetypes hold. So for me, I feel like they're so relatable with everyone. And the main four archetypes that I use in teaching movement and teaching vitality and all the philosophies that I use, they are all deeply integrated. But the ones that I teach in my movement courses and workshops is the first one is move hard, which is the warrior.
Mm.
And the warrior is all about strength, power, resilience, robustness. How can we curate stability and the ability to tackle physical and emotional adversity and still come up without being defeated in a way, you know? The second is move soft. So it's the counterpart to move hard. And it's the monk archetype. It's all about using the breath to soften the body. It's all about using gentle movements. Instead of working out, which is the warrior, we're working in.
Mm-hmm.
So we're working inwardly to soften the body from inside out using the breath and the softer movements to cultivate energy. If the warrior was expending energy to eventually gain more energy in the long term or more capacity in the long term, the monk would be initially the softening and the breathing cultivates energy now. When I'm really low and depleted, the monk will cultivate energy for me now. So if I lean into these movements that find more of a restful, still recovery place within my body, it cultivates energy. So I really like to link the hardness with the softness as like a weekly practice. And then the third one is the jester. And the jester is all about learning to become the fool. And the fool is so important for learning. If we don't fail, we don't learn.
Mm.
And in mythology, in the archetypes of progression, the fool is the precursor to the king or queen. You don't get to become your internal king or your internal queen unless you have walked the path of the fool. If you aren't willing to fail, and as we were talking about in coffee, if you're not willing to test, put things out there and test it and let it fail. It's okay.
Mm.
You need to do that to develop the characteristics and the ability within yourself to become your king, to really be the leader that you want to be, not only for yourself, but for the people around you, your friends, your family, your community, your clients, for everyone. You have to be able to showcase that, right? And within yourself, it's just a fact of growth, right? So that's the fourth one, move different.
Yeah.
So it's like we're embodying the fool and the archetype of the fool. And the fourth one is the lover. It's move connected. And I feel like this is such a piece that is missing in all the fitness communities, all the movement communities, is moving in connection with another. And this is all about learning how to relate with the external world and the active external world. So in terms of movement, when I move connected, when I teach people to move connected, I teach them how to be receptive to another. I teach them how to move in conjunction with someone else by learning to listen to the inputs that are coming in. So there's normally three forms of things that could happen when I'm relating with someone when I'm moving with them. So it could be contact dance where we're connecting our hands or arms together and we're dancing and rolling off each other. So the three inputs are, I can decide to do nothing and just feel your input. Mm-hmm. I could decide to resist your input. Mm-hmm. So if you're pushing on me, I can decide to push back. Or the third one is, I can decide to go with your input. So these three kind of angles of how we relate with life, if something happens, I can decide to just stand and witness. Mm. I can decide to put up resistance against the thing that happens. I can decide to go with the thing that happens. So this is transfers directly into your psychological frame, including your relationships with your friends and with your partner. If, say, you have an argument, I can decide to just stand and be witness. Mm. I can decide to put up resistance and protest, mm. right? I can decide to just go with the flow and see where that takes me with what they're saying. And in this dance that we do, in terms of moving connected or moving like the lover, which is the receptivity of yourself and the other, mm. learning to create the third, which is the third, as I see, if I'm one, you are two, and we create the third, mm-hmm. it's like a third body that of receptivity that we're learning to dance with.
Interesting.
And in this framework, we learn so much about how we relate with the other world, with the outside world,
mm.
and what inputs we're listening to and what we're missing in terms of the inputs that are coming in from someone else or the external environment. So these four aspects, I believe, the warrior, the monk, the jester, and the lover, if we can incorporate these four themes or archetypes into our week, in my eyes, for me, this has been the most whole practice I have been able to embody and see and teach.
Hmm.
Yeah, so that's like the spiel.
Dude, there's some fucking really... I think, one, that was a great explanation.
Mm.
And two, there's some really, really interesting concepts in there. I think the one that stood out to me the most was the jester, the idea that the jester is the precursor to the king or the queen. I think that's super fucking powerful.
Mm.
I can definitely see... Again, like... What I kind of like about this is, and this is not really my world, but what I like about this is, you know, we think about like fitness and training... It is very much like focused in on one kind of way of using the body.
Yeah.
It's focused on like, I want to train my body to do a thing. And that's fucking awesome. And there's also like, we've got this body and there's so many different aspects to it. There's so many different opportunities to learn from the way that we use our body that I think we just don't get as many opportunities to explore.
Yeah.
Like the way we connected, our good mutual friend, Andrew Meok, he runs like men's sexuality retreats. And one of the things that he does is gets men to tap into their silliness or their playfulness. Mm. And that's consistently the one that he finds that men have the hardest time tapping into.
Yeah.
And I personally resonate with that so much. Not, you know, in my body, how do I actually just, if someone was like, just be as silly as you possibly can, and there's a bunch of other people watching, there's a lot of hesitation and, you know, there's a lot of like, oh, I don't know. I would feel uncomfortable doing that.
Yeah.
But then where else is that playing out in my life?
Yeah.
And that part of me that is afraid to actually fail and afraid to look silly in front of other people, that's constantly been like, okay, what am I going to say and how is that going to be perceived, or how am I going to look, or what am I going to do with my body and how is that going to be perceived by other people?
Yeah.
I like the idea that it's not necessarily a way that you need to train all the time. I don't need to go and do reps of weighted being a jester, you know, but... The opportunity to explore how I move and maybe how I don't want to move in certain scenarios can teach me about, in a really embodied way, in a physical reality, can teach me about, oh, I find this is physically hard to do. What does it say about the internal state of myself?
Yeah.
And I think that's a fascinating like realm of inquiry.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so powerful. And, you know, there's a concept of like, make the impossible possible, make the possible easy, make the easy elegant, right? And normally the jester will be in the impossible place. Like you're kind of dealing with the impossible part of reality. Like, oh God, I don't want to do this. This is awkward. I've never tried this before. It's kind of feeling a bit impossible.
Yeah.
But then eventually the impossible becomes the possible and the possible becomes the easy and the easy becomes the elegant. And when you're in the elegant, you're in the king.
Yeah.
And the king resides in the place where he completely has ownership and rulership over that movement, that modality, that idea, that way of moving through the world, and being able to pull that out in full ownership of that, I think is a really powerful journey. And also just to know that there is a methodical step to that, the failure is so needed.
Yeah.
You cannot skip it to becoming your king.
Yeah.
You can't. And just to know that that is a thing, there's almost some like relief in that. Like, ooh, I need to fail.
Yeah. And I think what's especially cool about the body stuff is because for me, like, the body stuff is a physical reality.
Yeah.
It's a physical experience that, like, there's an if you're afraid of going upside down or afraid of doing a backflip, let's say, there's an emotional and a physical reality. Your body does not want to do the thing that you want it to do. And then by going through the process of actually learning to do the thing physically, you feel the shift in the emotional and the internal state. And your body doesn't feel as physically scared.
Yeah.
You emotionally don't feel as afraid, and your perception of what is possible is now different.
Yeah.
And so for me, I know failure is important and failure is necessary in my head. But that doesn't stop that part of me inside being like, fuck, I don't want to fail.
Yeah.
So, you know, I guess my question to you would be, you know, do you find that, or in what ways do you find that actually practicing the thing in, let's say, a workshop, and let's say, you know, a container, you're like, hey, we're going to do the full thing right now. We're going to do the softening thing.
Mm.
How much does that actually translate to, say, being able to soften in an argument with your spouse?
Mm.
Is there, how much transfer is there? Where is the bleed?
Mm.
I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, like anything, I think it's the daily revolutions that count, right?
Mm.
And the more we can place our physiology into the place, the more the neuroplasticity is allowed to happen.
Mm.
And if your programming has been to put up resistance with any friend or partner, one session of learning how to soften may give you some internal insight.
Yeah.
It may flicker a switch that may happen 2 hours through the argument that be like, hang on a second. What if I just softened? Or what if I went with the flow? What if I was to stand as a witness and wasn't to go and follow the path of like resistance?
Mm.
What would happen? And then the more we practice these movements or these ideas and we start incorporating them into our week, the more connected we become and the more the synapses and the neurology starts to actually change.
Mm-hmm.
And we start finding those connections starting to deepen. You know, those pathways are starting to actually light up more. And I think having the physical experience of embodying that feeling and inviting that feeling into the practices and being, for example, sometimes in some of the jester components of the workshop, we'll do certain, have you ever heard of a Japanese dance called Buto?
No.
So there's a Japanese dance called Buto, which is a beautiful expression of the taboo and the shadow of your internal psyche. And half the group will witness the other group in this expression, which feels really uncomfortable and awkward. And there's a certain like process and theme around how to curate that for a group. And in that, there is so much uncomfortability, but then also the container that we try to create is one of safety where people can drop into that. And that has like a deep neurological effect if continued. Right?
Mm.
And I think as long as you just flick the switch, give people the permission, and then eventually that flick is available to them. It now appears. Before it was in the fog of darkness, now that capacity is potentially available to them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a great answer, man. And it's like fucking everything, man. It is a practice. And
yeah.
If you do something once, sure, it's going to be fleeting, but that doesn't mean that the thing is groundless. It means you need to do it more.
Totally.
And there's a real value in knowing what something feels inside, like inside your body.
Yeah.
If you know, you're heightened and angry and emotional, if you know what softening and using the breath to slow down and drop your physiology down, you know what that feels like in the body. You've got that reference experience to draw on far more.
Yeah.
If someone is like, okay, awesome. I'm interested in, you know, I can see maybe one of these would make me a little bit nervous, or I can see that I have a real proclivity to one, but not to another. And they want to start to explore that for themselves a little bit. Are there any like self-guided exercises, maybe one for each of them, or even just for one of them, you would like encourage someone to go and inquire with themselves, or how, like where they can go and explore this for themselves?
Yeah. So if we just break it up into the four, right? For the warrior, just do some strength training.
Yeah.
Simple. Push-ups, squats, whatever you want. Lunges, grab something heavy and move it, you know, and push yourself to the point of maybe failure, maybe not failure, right? It's a beautiful, easy way of just testing your body's ability to push into a place of resistance and overcoming that challenge, right? Yeah. The monk, a beautiful practice is just some breath-connected exercises like Qigong, right? You can do easy exercises where you're just breathing in and you're softening down. Very simple, using your hands and your body to extend and contract. Using your breath to extend and contract. And just doing this for 10, 15 minutes will drop your body into a place where you're collecting energy that's available all around you and allowing your breath to fill up and the body to soften. So your internal energy or your qing or your ji is the internal resource of energy that you feel, like the movement of energy in your body. So just by moving it in a softening way, you can really start to stimulate all this energy.
And is that something that someone should be able to expect to feel somewhat after 15 minutes of practice? Or is that a thing like you're not going to feel shit for 3 months, so just stick with it?
You will definitely feel something after 15 minutes.
Interesting.
Yeah, cool. But the progression of feeling increases the more sensitive you become. If you were to do 15 minutes of slow breath-connected movements, you'll feel calmer, you feel lighter, you feel softer, you feel more integrated, you feel more connected. There's definitely instant benefits that happen just from breathing and filling up the belly and connecting the body into the soft rhythm, especially if you've never done it before. Mm. It's going to be very obvious.
Yeah, cool.
And the jester, just try something different. You know, move in a way that you haven't moved before. Go to a class that you normally don't go to. Mm. You know, be in the stage of learning. So if zone one was, I don't get it, go there and play and I don't get it for a bit.
Nice.
Instead of like, I kind of get it and I've been practicing it.
Yeah.
Or zone three where it's in my back pocket, I own it, you know?
Yeah.
Play in zone one. And for the lover, do a dance class. Go dance with a friend, go train with a friend, go move with a friend. Mm. Now, contact improvisation is a beautiful way of learning how to really connect with another individual through movement and really learning how to be really receptive. It's probably one of the most receptive practices that I've ever come across where you have to listen to every moment and meet it.
Mm.
Every single little moment I have to meet the other person and know where they are, know where my body is. And I'm learning to listen and I'm learning to either resist, soften, or just be standing still every moment. Every single like ding, 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 ding. I'm meeting it. If you do it for 2 hours, that muscle gets trained.
Mm.
You know what's coming in and how I'm going to meet it. So it's a beautiful way of embodying some of those practices.
Interesting, man. Yeah, I think people have got some great stuff there. If they're interested in some of this stuff, it's like, cool, there's some starting points for you to go and explore there. The last question for you on this would be, on the one hand, you've got someone, let's just say someone is completely, like the warrior thing, they know that fucking back to front. They know the shit out of that. But maybe the jester, they're like, yo, that's not, like, I don't do that at all. And there might be someone who's like, I don't fucking want to do that. That makes me feel uncomfortable. I don't want to do that. And there's obviously the curiosity about going and pursuing the things that feel alluring to us that we want to do. And there's also maybe some blind spots and some value of, maybe I don't want to do this. Maybe that's why I should do this kind of thing.
Mm.
What would you say to someone who's kind of like, I don't fucking want to do that. Not interested at all.
Mm.
Are you like, go after it because that's the reason you should do it? Or are you like, follow your interest?
I think different stages of our life will call for different openness to different things. And as we kind of progress through different stages, right, we're going to be much more receptive and open to different things. Mm. Maybe there's more of a curiosity to do the warrior stuff. And then as soon as the body's biofeedback signal starts being like, yo, too much, guess who gets, it's time to shine, maybe the monk, right? And if you say you don't want to learn things new, you won't grow.
Mm.
Simple. You know, the jester is just about learning, putting yourself in zone one where you can learn.
Yeah.
And I think a fundamental part of our humanity is to want to grow and learn and evolve. And, you know, if you were to say, I don't want to move connected, good luck having a relationship.
Mm.
You know, you have to move connected in one way or another. It's either you get good at it or you don't. And it's either you get good at friendships and relationships and you get good at being able to be intimate or you don't. And it's about learning how to connect those pieces together because these are fundamental things in life. Things are going to get hard. You're going to have to overcome them. You're going to need to soften into things. Otherwise, you're going to have a hard time. Your body's going to tell you about it. You're going to have to learn, otherwise you're not going to grow. You're going to have to learn how to play with other people. Otherwise, you're going to be very lonely.
Fucking boom, dude. Well said. And, you know, one of the things that's so challenging about these things as they happen in life is that when they're fucking happening, it's like, I don't know if I'm fucking prepared for this shit. You know what I mean? It's like, when it happens, it's like, it's almost too late. Like, whatever you've done to prepare for this moment right now, this shit's real life right now.
Yeah.
And when that fight is happening with your spouse, or, you know, a breakup happens or whatever, it's like, well, that process of relating and listening to another person, that's happening real time. So sometimes, even though it might feel a bit disconnected, it's like when we create a container to practice certain elements, and it might not be the direct thing, but also it's like going to start a fight with your spouse just so you can practice being in a relationship. It's like, well, that's not really, you know, one way, but, you know, that's why I'm still single. Fuck. I've been trying to do that all the time.
I've been practicing too hard.
Starting fights. Yeah, I love that, dude. And another way that I think we've got to think more intentionally about practice, I'm interested to kind of move into your role as a performer and how you got into that, is because, like, the demands of doing something as a performer are very, very different. Like, you perform as a fire performer. You've got a fucking flaming object or multiple flaming objects, and you got people around, and the consequences for something like that are much higher. So the level of ownership you've got to have over a skill is much, much higher. And I'm interested to hear you unpack just your experience and your thoughts about, like, as a performer, how do you practice to do the things that you do? Can I just kind of fuck around? When I juggle, I'm just fucking around, you know, just doing a few things, but I drop it all the time. So, yeah, how do you practice as a performer? And maybe what are some errors that you've learned from or that you see other people making when they practice?
Yeah. Great question. So it started off as pure fun. You know, it started off as me seeing someone spin a fire staff and being like, I got to learn that. It was like the curiosity calling out to me. My heart had a say in it, so I didn't have a say in it, which is the same thing, but you know what I mean. And started off as just a lot of fun. And then I started to realize that, hey, I really enjoy this. And then I started connecting with others that were doing this for a living. And I'm like, holy shit, this is inspiring. And the only way to mitigate the danger and the risk is to get so dialed in with those movements and have them down pat and put so much time and effort into them and have such deep spatial awareness. Because one of the biggest things with performing with fire, especially in, like, sometimes in the circles that I'm in, they're really tight.
Yeah.
Like, I have 2 meters by 2 meters and I'm throwing fiery things around. If I let go of it or I hit myself and it goes flying, someone can get really injured.
And your fucking wingspan is basically 2 meters by 2 meters. Fucking tall guy. Yeah.
So it's the dedication of the practice is definitely one. All the movement stuff helps so much. In terms of spatial awareness, like all the practices that both me and you do, right? Yep. In terms of, like, learning about our bodies and learning where we are in space all the time is so handy because it directly translates to the safety that I can create and trust I can create with my body. Things aren't left up to chance. They're actually deeply honed. They're deeply practiced. The channels are so deep, right? And it's also a big part of it is connecting into that meditative state as well and being so present. And if you're not present while you're doing stuff like this in a performative environment, the risk increases so much.
Yeah.
You've got to really be able to just block things out or connect, a better word to say, with not block, but connect so deeply with everything around you that you're so present and you're so aware and you're not getting distracted. And the preparation before going on stage is like the preparation I do before practicing. You know, I really drop into my body using certain sequences.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So walk me through, like, what does a practice session look like for you? And I'm also interested in, when you're practicing, obviously you want to be able to do more things that you can't currently do, right?
Yeah.
But there's also a certain level of ownership over the things that you can do that needs to be there and to hone stuff that you're going to do in shows.
Yeah.
So on the one hand, you got to drop shit all the time if you want to learn something new. You got to fail. but you also can't be dropping shit when you've got, you know, a bunch of screaming hens night people around you or whatever, you know, like, so what does actual practice session look like and how are you attaining new skills?
Yep. So it's kind of broken up into a couple of segments, right? The one I focus on when I'm practicing new skills is just learning the new skill and not taking it, transferring it into the show yet. Mm-hmm. So that's just a separate element where I'm drilling a new skill. It might be a new figure of connection with the sticks. It could be a new different like motion and catch. Mm-hmm. It could be something around that realm that I know that I still need another 2,000-3,000 repetitions before it's show worthy. Normally for my shows, depending on how tight the arena is or how tight the stage is or how big the stage is, I'll wean it back to about 70 to 80% of my capacity. Mm-hmm. I can't go 100% capacity because 100% capacity, it opens up too much of a risk for something to go wrong.
Yeah.
I need to be in the place where I'm just so dialed.
Yeah.
And those dialed bits need to be practiced on a regular, every second day basis. So I'm constantly practicing the dialedness because once I step away from the practice of those movements which I need to perform and they need to be ready, if I step away for 2, 3, 4 weeks, they start getting a little bit dusty and rusty. Mm. The pathways starting to regress just a little bit. And sometimes that's enough for a mistake to happen.
Yeah.
So you've got to constantly keep laying down and walking that path. And then a portion of the time will be spent learning new tricks, but they won't be ready for a year or two, or they might not be ready for 6 months.
Maybe a stupid question, but are you counting reps or are you just fucking in the, you just in the thing? Are you like, I want to do 1,000 reps of this or are you just like...
Yeah, the programming of
it. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's normally time.
Interesting.
I won't normally do the reps. There'll be a lot of reps in there, but I'll go with feel. I feel like if I commit myself to reps, sometimes my shoulder might not be happy, right? And if I commit to the reps, I feel like I've cut myself short. But if I'm listening to the feedback that's coming through my body, shoulder and elbow, maybe not the best today. No, let's go a bit lighter. Let's play with these movements instead. Let's drill the choreography maybe 5 times. Maybe then we feel good after 5 times, get a bit more gas in the tank, we're feeling good. Let's drill another 5 more times.
Cool.
Or I might go rock up to a session, drill it once and be like, not today, son.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, and then wind it back and work us on some lower impact skill work.
Yeah.
So it's just constantly listening and honing in and not being attached to the sets and reps, but being attached to the process of listening, which creates a longevity, which actually allows me to do the thing because the longevity is the thing.
I would have loved if your answer was like, you just talk about the monk and softening and you're just like, no, shut up. Push through anyways. Your shoulder hurts. You got to get those reps in.
And breathe through it at the same time.
100%. But yeah, you know, and that's a perfect example actually of just what you're saying then of, you know, you want to be able to do something to a high level. Being able to listen to the body, tune in and drop in, like what is necessary right now? Do I need to actually soften into this moment? Do I need to actually give myself body some more time to recover?
Yeah.
Or is this one of those days where I can push things a little bit more?
Yeah.
I think when it comes to skill development, if you want to do skills with your body, even strength skills, there is this natural undulation and sometimes it's not an undulating wave. Sometimes it's fucking chaotic. It's like today I felt, this morning I felt awesome, but now I feel like shit. And to be able to tune into your body is actually going to be able to make your practice session so much more effective.
Mm.
So I really like that. If someone is doing some form of skill training, let's start out. Maybe it's fire performing, maybe it's a flow art, maybe it's something else.
Mm.
If they're not an experienced performer, there's that. I find this in music. When I'm first going into it, when I first started doing shows, there's the fear of making a mistake. There's a lack of experience, the fear of making a mistake. And ironically, that makes the mistake far more likely to happen. Now, if I miss a note, I remember the first show I played on guitar, I was performing some originals and I got to the pre-chorus of my first song and I realized that I tuned one of my strings a semitone down. And so the whole thing's like, and I had to stop in the middle of my first song and retune my guitar and start again. That's really embarrassing, but there's no like physical safety, you know, like, you know, just emotional safety. So how would you guide someone to say, when are you ready to perform? What kind of things can you look for to get yourself ready to perform so that you're confident going into maybe a show when you're not super experienced as a performer?
Yeah. The number one thing that I've learned about performing and being on stage is making sure I've performed, especially if it's important to me, the show, and it's a big deal for me, and maybe it's a big show, right?
Yeah.
Something that I'm getting paid a lot for, yeah. Something that people are relying on me for. It's like the show-stopping moment of the entire night.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this has to be dialed. Like, I'm a professional, right? What I would do is actually perform it to 3 or 4 friends.
Nice.
Exactly how I'm going to perform it, with the same level of flair, positioning, oomph, all of it. That for me, I've done a couple of big shows with new choreo that me and a performance partner did not perform to anyone until the first time we did it on stage. And it was a semi-disaster.
Wow.
With timing, it was a semi-disaster. With remembering, most of it is actually just the nerves. The nerves will block the mind, and the mind will forget what the next step is because it just hasn't been done before in front of a witness.
Yeah.
You know, the witness changes everything. As soon as someone starts watching you do it, it changes the whole game. So just having someone's eyes on you while you're doing the thing you've practiced changes it completely. Changes the feeling, the tone, the confidence, the angst. Everything changes by like a factor of 10.
Yeah.
Just have someone watch you do the thing you're going to do as you were doing the thing.
Yeah.
If you're nervous about it or anxious about it, and it will come out 10 times smoother. Guarantee you.
Fucking
that is the number one thing.
So super fucking solid advice from a seasoned performer. Like if I had only done that before, but I think there was that fear of failure and that stopped me from wanting to get in front of people. But there was that part of myself that wanted to get in front of people and do it. And then it ended up being a fucking disaster. So I think that's
100%.
That's fucking really, really sound advice.
Yeah.
I'm interested more performance questions.
Yeah.
I know you've got a course coming up where you're teaching people to perform as well. And I'm interested in that performance mindset because there's this magpie's really fucking going off. Really loving our content, just cheering us on. If I put two people up on stage, you know, I don't know if you saw those like Australian super ads from ages ago, with like same age, same income. Yeah. Like one of them is like, so one of them goes up the escalator, the other one goes down.
Yeah, yeah. Great ad.
Niche Australian joke right now. Yeah. But you know, if you got two performers, same skill level, doing the same routine, same tricks, right? Both of them are doing it. One person looks like they're kind of like just doing pretty tricks and the other one captivates the audience. What are the differences between those two people in terms of a captivating performance that aren't just technical?
It is the intention that they've set beforehand. It is the intention of the exchange of energy that they've set beforehand. It's really tapping into what do I want my audience to feel and having that as a key word in my head. So if there's an audience that I know I'm performing to for a certain event, if I want them to feel emotive, like emotional, then I know that my transmission to them is emotional. My face changes. My body language changes. The way I slow down in certain parts to the certain bits of the music will change. When I'm not thinking that, when I'm thinking just me and who's watching me and I'm a little bit nervous, a little bit uncomfortable, I'm just going to do the tricks to make myself look good, I lose all that. When I'm like, no, what is the exchange that's going on here? What do I want them to feel inside? I want them to feel sadness in this moment. Boom. I drop into that feeling of sadness in my body and I look at them like my whole family is like something's happened to them. And it's just like it emotes because they're seeing and feeling that texture within me because that's my intention.
Yeah.
But if I don't have that intention, it's not in the forefront of my mind. I'm getting lost in my revolutions, in my moves. Yeah.
And the other fucking really great thing about that in performing as well, this is something this is only maybe a music topic that's slightly unrelated, but because we're talking about performance, I think it's relevant. I find whenever I'm like, and this is honestly a lot, when I'm performing, I'm like, fuck, I hope I'm doing this good. Or fuck, I hope I'm playing this right. Fuck, I hope I'm hitting these notes. And that's such a self-focused frame that there's no opportunity to really communicate that energy transfer. It's almost like I want you guys to validate me.
Yeah.
And that also makes it so much more self-focused and more, you know, like more caught up, and it's not going to be as good.
Yeah.
But when you're setting an intention for how someone else, you want someone else to feel, that's the energy transfer, but you're also completely focused on that service of them.
Yeah.
And that helps you get out of your own head and more into the actual thing and into the emotion as well. Totally. So I think that's a, it's like a spiral. Like,
And they can feel that.
Yes.
They feel it straight away. They know whether you're asking from energy from them.
Yeah.
Or whether you're giving them energy.
Yeah.
Or whether there's a beautiful fair exchange.
Yeah.
When you give, you get.
Yeah.
Right? So if I give to the crowd, boom, I get.
Yeah.
If I don't give to the crowd, it's they may give just because it's awesome and cool.
Yeah.
But the energy exchange isn't that strong. Yeah.
That's super interesting, man. I really like that answer. And the last question I want to ask you around performance, kind of moving on from this, is I think something I look at you having done with Fire Performance and also a lot of the stuff that you do around Vitality is that you've managed to make your interests a lifestyle and career. And I know for me, before I started doing this stuff, I felt like I was on the other side of that, and I have conversations with people all the time about like how did you make that jump when you're just like an interested person that wants to do more of it, but now you've done a lot of it. And I think you've made that jump in many areas of your life. So if there's someone listening to this, like, fuck, I'm interested in all this stuff, but I want to do it more, whether it's yoga teaching, whether it's Pilates, whether it's performing, what's some of the most outsized ROI advice that you can give to someone who wants to make that more a part of their life and more a part of their career?
Yeah. So both successful and unsuccessful people have the same goals.
Yeah.
The successful people are the ones that put in the daily revolutions every day and just start moving. You can't stop moving in that direction. It could be something as small as just writing down a list, and then the next day you make that list smaller and more precise, and then the next day you make a phone call, and then the next day you post something, and the next day you decide to buy a staff, and the next day you decide to watch a couple of YouTube videos, and the next day you decide to maybe enroll in my course. It's just this slow progression of movement. Everyone has the same. Everyone wants their business to do well. Everyone wants heaps of money. Everyone wants heaps of friends. Everyone wants to be invited to the coolest parties. Everyone wants a beautiful partner and a beautiful house somewhere by the ocean. Yeah. All unsuccessful people and successful people have the same goals.
Yeah.
What differentiates them is just the daily revolutions that take a fucking whole heap of time to accumulate.
Mm-hmm.
That's one. So just realizing that movement, even the smallest amount of movement, is just required on a daily basis. And the other piece is a beautiful quote by Rumi. A two-day journey with a guide will take 200 years without one. So having a mentor, a guide, someone that has walked the path, will just shortcut the fuck out of the process for you. Say it's someone with business, right? Someone that's walked the path of creating a successful online business or an in-person business. Boom, mentor. That might take me two lifetimes to figure out what he's figured out. Same with movement, same with performing, same with your health, same with your vitality, same with your purpose and your career. Right? Someone that's fully aligned to their purpose and career, how? How do they get aligned and fully feel like they're accomplishing the things they want to do? How? Like, what's the process? It might just take a conversation. It might take, I don't know, a session. I don't know. You know, but having someone to guide you and mentor you is really powerful. The daily revolutions are really powerful. And just spending some time and really thinking about what you want and just writing it down is also just so tangible, man. Like, people just forget to dream big and write it down.
Yeah. I love that, dude. It's so interesting. I think a lot of this conversation has been about drawing those cross bridges between different elements and different, you know, fields. And I think that, the same is true in training. You know, my experience so far and whatever level I've gotten to in business is exactly the same.
Mm.
It's like being afraid of the reps as just when I felt like I've plateaued in training, when I felt like I've plateaued in business, when I felt like I plateaued in so many different, every single area of my life, it's when some mental model or framework has led to me being caught up and avoiding just doing the fucking thing. And then when I'm showing up and doing the thing, sometimes I've been fucking doing the thing, running in circles, and then some one with more experience who's doing the thing has looked at me and be like, dude, you're a fucking idiot. Like, like, sure, like, good effort, but also like, have you tried X, Y, and Z? And I'm like, no. And then they can help me provide clarity and direction to those reps.
Yeah.
So I've got to be willing to show up and do the thing. I can't just be YouTube tutorialing my way to, you know, and never fucking actually putting any skin in the game. Yeah. And then having that guy who's walked the path, who understands what it's like to not fucking know, and then can help provide that clarity and direction for me to focus the attention and direction, has been like the golden combination for any time I've achieved something. I'm like, I didn't think I was ever going to get that.
Yeah.
As like proving it and earning it with the experience.
Yeah.
And also having that guidance. So I think it's a fucking great answer.
Oh, it's so powerful. And just to finish on the quote, right? Like, intellectualism is fear of the direct experience.
Yeah.
So we can sit there and intellectualize all we want, right? And read the books and write the lists and do all the things. But just getting out there and just doing the thing that you want to do and become and starting to put yourself in the environment is the thing.
Yep.
Do the thing.
Yep. And I think what gives me pause and what gives me a little courage as well is that I know how fucking scared I am of doing the thing sometimes.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people feel like that. Totally. I think almost everyone feels like that.
Yeah,
I don't think anyone doesn't feel like that. Or it's very, very rare. And so if you're able to overcome that within yourself, even just for a moment, even just for a slightest kind of thing, I think it's like, oh shit, I'm getting ahead.
Yeah, totally.
I want to finish with a little game.
Yep, hit me.
It's called Noise versus Signal.
Yeah.
We're both people who enjoy exploring lots of different elements and the wide variety of different things in nutrition and movements, and I know in my own experience, that's led to me coming across some things. I'm like, wow, this is really valuable. Not a lot of people know about this. And then there's also a bunch of other shit I come across. I'm like, ah, that's not it. So I'm going to give you a topic and I want you to let me know, like, what's the thing that you think is like, that's just a kind of trend. That's just a, you know, that's a bit of noise. That's a lot of people think this is valuable and I don't think there's much in this, versus what's something that's really fucking valuable. And what's really like, okay, this is really fucking high ROI and high leverage. This is something I'm like, I think a lot of people do this. I don't think it's as much.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
cool?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
All right.
Yep.
Start off training. What's a fucking fad? And what's something that you think is more people need to be doing this?
Oof. What's a fad? God, see, if you ask a person like me who can see like the value in everything,
sure,
and then the value in nothing. I'll try to play along.
All right.
What's something that's a fad? Let's say, you know, you see a lot of fitness females that do the banded walking crabs.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just don't resonate with it that much.
Yeah. Why not?
Yeah, because it just seems like it's too limiting. I feel like there's so much more they could be doing for maybe goal specific if they wanted a bigger booty. I kind of get it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just think it's a fad.
Yeah.
It's not something that's gonna last.
Yeah.
Yeah. And something people need to do more of, is dance, I would say. More fitness people, even in the movement scene, need to dance more.
Cool.
They need to be more connected to music and rhythm and dance and connection, even partner dance. There's so much gold there for them. That's the lover archetype, move connected.
Fucking sick.
Yeah.
Number two, nutrition.
Yep.
Big old one.
Ooh.
What's a thing that people are doing? It's like, ah, oh, man, that's just a fad. That's not going to go anywhere.
Ooh.
Versus, what do you think people need more of?
All right. Let's say banking all their dollars on supplementation.
Nice.
You know, like the protein shakes, the creatine, all those bits and pieces. The bang for your buck is minimal.
Yep.
You know, like the gains you're going to get are minimal compared to just eating good old-fashioned food and good quality food.
You don't have a promo code for a supplement company?
And use my promo code.
Yeah, what kind of?
Simba's Fire.
Yeah, yeah.
And wheyprotein.com.
Yeah.
And what people need to be doing more of is listening to their body, listening to their body in relation to what foods they are eating and what the symptoms may be apart from digestive.
Interesting.
So there are a lot of symptoms that can the body can adopt or showcase that aren't just in your digestive tract. Your skin, your clarity of mind, fogginess, ability to move and move well, like joint pain, arthritic pain, can all be related to food. People have to tick over into associating food equaling just my digestion.
Mm.
There is so much more that your food can be impacting with your body.
This is fucking even better than I thought it was going to
yeah.
be.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a huge one for me, actually, just to touch on that, just to understand how much, yeah, like, I mean, I was never a huge supplement guy, to be honest, but I think so many people reach for those things and like, okay, well, this is, I want this, so therefore, this has that on the label, so therefore, easy for me to make the one-to-one connection.
Mm.
Of course, a lot of people know, sure, supplements aren't the holy grail, but I think so many people go down that road first, and I 100% agree, man, there's the, not just understanding, okay, this food is good, black and white. This food is good, black and white. Different foods can radically affect different people in different ways at different times in their life and in different times in the fucking day.
Yeah.
So I love creating that internal mental checklist and starting to build your own world of nutrition. How does this food affect me?
Yeah.
Maybe it says that it's fine, but actually don't feel good when I eat it.
Yeah.
So that's such beautiful valuable data to have.
Yeah. Because you can ask so many people, like, how do you feel after eating that? They're like, yeah, I feel fine.
Yeah.
Then I like dig deeper. Like, how does your gut feel? How does your throat feel? Is there excess mucus in your nose or in your throat the morning after?
Mm.
Is there 3 days later, 2 days later, a day later, how do your knees feel?
Yeah.
How do your feet feel? You know, there's so many questions. Where does the crash come? Does it come 3 hours later?
Mm.
Do you feel full of energy? Like, there's so many things energetically through the body, through the digestive system, through your mind and clarity, through your everything. Moods, yeah. Everything that can change and shift. And it's just being really aware and listening. And that can be a big, big overwhelming thing to be like, oh my God, all these things are happening.
Sure.
Right? But just learning to listen. How do I feel after eating this thing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great. Recovery. What's a fad?
Ooh.
What's high leverage?
A fad in recovery. I'd like to think the ice baths are really good. I feel really good from them, but I just don't know from a recovery perspective how great they are. They're amazing for the mental side of things for me. That's why I mentally use it, because I like going up against the adversity. It's like the warrior going into the thing, being like,
yeah,
we fucking got this.
Yeah.
How's this going to like enliven me, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know how good it is for actually recovery.
Yeah.
So I'll put that in the fad for
fuck
now.
Yeah.
And let's go high leverage. Fucking the softening practices, man.
Mm.
Breath connected qigong style movements, just 10-15 minutes a day of just breathing and moving really slow and gently, like intentionally and mindfully softening everything. In fucking incredible. Yeah.
Dope. Awesome. Last one, self-care / relationship to self. Should we all just be taking ourselves on more scented candle spa dates? Or is that noise? And what should we be doing?
Okay. So a fad with self-care. Oh, God. This is a good one. I'm just going to say, you know how people justify eating really shit food as like, sure. Oh, like this is my, like, it's like, I just need to do this sometimes. Great. You know what I mean? Fuck. If you feel like shit for 3 days after, I just don't see the value in it.
Yeah.
Eat what makes you feel really good. And you know, sometimes put a little bit of secret sauce in there, but pick the secret sauce that works for you.
Nice.
Yeah. So that's going to be one.
I like it.
Because some people justify massive binges, and I'm like, yeah, really? Yeah. And what people need to do more of? take yourself by yourself for a walk through nature every once in a while. And don't have your headphones on. Just walk for an hour and just listen. Just look at the trees, look at the river, look at the stream. Take your shoes off. You know, just spend some time by yourself and just see what comes through. Yeah, I think that's so underrated. Like, just our connection with nature, just being alone and listening to the birds, the wind, seeing the sun, seeing the river, seeing the creek by yourself with no distractions.
What do you think the main value is that in that for yourself?
For me, it opens up this level of connection with the finiteness of life. You know, I can really see as like, you know, when you look around, you walk around, you see like the green leaves, and then you see the orange leaves on the ground, and you see the brown leaves. I'm seeing the cycles of life in front of me. I'm seeing the stream move through the rocks, and I'm seeing the obstacles that happen in life and how things open up and close, you know?
Yeah.
I'm seeing the sun rise in the morning as like the dawning of my consciousness as a baby. As it hits its zenith point in the sky, I'm seeing myself as a middle-aged human. As I'm seeing the setting sun go down behind the horizon, I'm seeing myself towards the end of my life and like reflecting on the life that I'd lived. So these rhythms in nature, they teach us so much and connect us so much to the reality of life. And the finiteness of life and the cycles of life. And it puts things back into perspective. And it gives you this level of ease that it's happening all around you and you just need to notice it. And it's happening right here with you, inside of you. Yeah.
I really like that answer, man. I think that the reason I asked is because the whole get back into nature thing gets banded around so much. A lot of this stuff gets banded around so much, but I think a lot of people aren't really able to answer why. Just like it's something that sounds good. It's like, you just need to go and get back into nature more. It's like, well, fucking why?
Yeah.
But I think exactly what you said about being connected to the cycles of life, as maybe still woo as that sounds, like it is a fact of reality. And I think that there's a lot of pain and suffering that come from being disconnected from that.
Totally.
One of my first mentors, Asher Packman, has actually been on this podcast. I went to like a death meditation workshop of his.
Yeah.
And he had, amongst other things, a rose. And he also had like a plastic rose. And he's like, which one of these is more beautiful? And people are like, oh, the real one is more beautiful than the plastic one. He's like, yeah, why? And then eventually his perspective was because one dies. It's not this thing that's just going to stay, like, you know, it's beautiful and it's fleeting. And I think that there's a lot of stuff that is like that, that we can get disconnected from. And that disconnects us from, yes, maybe some of the pain and maybe some of the fear and discomfort, but also a lot of the beauty as well.
Yeah.
I love your answer.
Yeah. Everything is always dying, you know, constantly. And it's always being reborn at the same time. Just like our identities, the things we're teaching, the things we're doing, the lives we live, right? They're constantly in a process of decay and renew at the same time. So just knowing that that's happening all around you and that is like the premise of life, it's a beautiful reminder.
Man, this has been really awesome. I've loved chatting, dude. We have so many similar physical appearances and also interests as well. So, man, this has been awesome, dude. And I know you have a few different things on offer, a few different ways for people to work with you. So where can people go to find out more about what you got going on?
Yeah, so come check out my social media platform, Simbas Fire, SimbasFire. And my website as well is all on there. So social media, Instagram is the best way to check it out. Yeah. Got a vitality mentorship, which is 3 months, which is just a holistic health deep dive into getting the most healthy and vital that you've ever been in your life and most on purpose you've ever been in your life. And the next exciting new thing that I'm launching in April is a fire performing course. So if you want to learn how to spin the fire staff like a pro, including all the stage presence and the flair and the tricks and the tips and all the monetization, how to make money from performing. This is the 5-week one-stop shop for you. So, yeah.
Epic, dude. I'll leave links to that in the show notes, man. This has been fucking fun, man.
It was a pleasure, man.
Sick.
Nice. That was good.